This is How Success Happens, where the staff of Entrepreneur chats with innovators, writers, artists, chefs, and a range of other unique personalities to better understand the traits that make excellence possible.
Nobody in Silicon Valley thinks it's actually them. They think everybody else is like this.
One of my regrets actually now, we should have pulled the plug sooner.
It's amazing when the universe sees you commit, how all of a sudden all these resources start to come together.
Thanks for joining us. And now, How Success Happens.
Welcome to this week's episode of How Success Happens. I'm Stephanie Schomer, Deputy Editor at Entrepreneur Magazine. Our guests today are Erica Cerullo and Claire Mazur, co-founders of the design and fashion website Of A Kind. The duo, who were best friends long before starting their business in 2010, recently released their first ever book called Work Wife, The Power of Female Friendship to Drive Successful Businesses. We'll talk to the women about their business, their partnership, and the lessons found in the book. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Whether you have a great idea you want to launch or a business you're running that you want to grow, Woman Entrepreneur's powerful Build Like a Woman curriculum of online courses gives you all the tools you need to take your business to the next level. From digital self-paced courses, virtual coaching sessions, and webinars with experts, we power the entire journey, arming women entrepreneurs and leaders with what they need to start, grow, and flourish. Get started today. It's free to start. Enroll now at entrepreneur.com/courses. Again, that's entrepreneur.com/courses.
For any of our listeners who may not be familiar, can you just kind of tell me a little bit about Of A Kind, what you guys set out to create, and how it has evolved over the years?
Yeah, so Of A Kind is a mix of e-commerce and editorial. We sell the pieces and tell the stories of really exciting emerging designers and makers in the fashion space, home space, beauty. We also have a very sort of cultish newsletter and podcast. Our newsletter is called 10 Things, and our podcast is called A Few Things. And it's where Erica and I just sort of surface all of our favorite discoveries across all the categories, whether it be apps, recipes, books, beauty products. And it didn't start that way, to answer your question. When we started, we released one new product every week, which is hard to believe now. It was all from emerging fashion designers, and we would release the product in conjunction with a series of stories about the designer. And they were all limited edition exclusive pieces. That is still very much at the crux of our business and sort of at the center of our brand, the fact that we work with emerging designers to create these pieces that are exclusive to Of A Kind, that are produced in limited batches, and that are accompanied by stories that really help you get to know the designers who we're featuring. But in addition to that, we have rolled out so many more categories. We now carry non-exclusive pieces too. We have content arm that goes beyond just the stories of the designers to include really all of our favorite discoveries. We say that our mission is to give our greatest discoveries the audience they deserve.
And when the business started, it was the two of us and some interns working out of our apartments. And it has grown now over the last 9 years. It's 10 employees total. And about 3 years ago, the business was acquired by Bed Bath & Beyond, which we like to say is everyone's favorite place to go to buy one thing but leave with nine.
It's very true. And I do want to get into both of those points about your growing team and about the Bed Bath & Beyond acquisition. But I do want to dive into your wonderful book, Work Wife, which chronicles your relationship as partners and also talks to some other amazing female founders and learns from how they kind of navigate their own relationship as they're building their business. But I do want to kind of dial back to your history. And of course, you guys were friends before you launched the business and decided to enter into this venture together in 2010. At the time, did you have any idea what you were getting into? And were you nervous about what working together would do to your relationship?
We didn't know what we were doing in general, which I think was a real perk of being 26 and 27, of coming at this with a certain amount of naivete and having the confidence that we would learn as we went. We knew we were smart and capable people, and I think we were happy to find our own ways, and we were blessedly not hemmed in by a lot of retail rules because we just hadn't known those rules, so we made them up as we started getting the business going. In terms of working together, we couldn't imagine it any other way. I think there are a lot of warnings people give around working with a friend and, oh, you're really putting your relationship on the line, and what happens when it doesn't work out, then that relationship's going to be gone. But for us, the idea of doing something so big and, you know, quitting our jobs to start a business with someone, either one on our own or two with someone that we didn't have this sort of relationship with, where we could be open and honest and authentic with each other, felt like a way crazier thing to do.
I remember having a moment, I think shortly after the business started, you know, certainly hadn't taken off yet and felt, and, you know, wondering, I wonder where this is going to go. And I remember thinking, God, if it doesn't work out, I bet this will be the end of my friendship with Erica, and that will be awful. And then I remember a moment probably 4 or 5 years later when we were going through a really rough patch and thinking that the business might go under. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, if the business goes under, Erica and I are still going to be friends. And realizing that we had reached that point where, like, we had fully come around to the other side, where no matter what happened, we were going to stay in each other's life. And we had just really solidified this relationship. And it was at that point, too, where we had to stop and say to ourselves, what if this business were to shut down tomorrow? What if we get to that point? Is there something else we want to do? And the only conclusion we could come to was that we wanted to keep working with each other. We didn't know what, you know, our dream jobs would be, but we knew that that was the thing that had become really important to us, was having each other side by side every day.
And that was really the impetus for writing the book, of realizing that our proudest career achievement is the partnerships that we have built. And in looking around us at the other companies that were coming up, or the relationships we were seeing between women, you know, at established companies and brands, that this was something that was happening in the world, that women were developing these personal professional relationships, what we call the work-wife relationship, that are so valuable across various phases of their lives and help them be their best professionally, but also just help them be their best as people.
Sure. I think you guys are so right. You always hear about how people go into business with their friends and just the worst happens. And I really love that the book celebrates both your relationship, but so many others. When you set out to write the book, did you always want to have those other perspectives brought in? Did you ever consider just kind of like writing this from your perspective exclusively?
It's funny you should ask. No, in fact, sharing the stories of other women was a huge part of what sort of pushed us to do it. We had thought about writing a book for a while, in part just because there had been a couple of really successful books written by women entrepreneurs. So we had started to get outreach from editors and agents saying, like, oh, we're looking to, you know, have the next girl boss or whatever.
Yeah.
And what never sat right with us was just telling our story, because it didn't feel like our story was at a point where it deserved an entire book, or that we had developed a sense of authority on anything that was worthy of an entire book. But when it occurred to us that this could be about more than just us, and that we could celebrate other women and other work wives, we got really excited, because at the end of the day, that is what we do in our business. And that's what we love doing, is celebrating other people and other things that we're really excited about. So that was a huge part of what pushed us to do it. We have a term of a kind that we've sort of developed into a sub brand called Professional Enthusiasts, because that's how we think of ourselves. Like, we love enthusing about the stuff other people are doing. And this very much fell into that bucket, finding other work wives who we were really enthusiastic about.
Did you have relationships with most of the women that were featured in the book before you started working on it?
We had relationships with 3 or 4 of the 14 duos and trios of women who are featured, but a lot of them, you know, the bulk of them, we did not. And we really just cold emailed. And, you know, that's also how we started our business, by cold emailing designers. And I think the idea resonated with a lot of women who had no encounters with us whatsoever, including the founders of Hanky Panky or of Killer Films, who are businesses that we really had admired. And I think because they had experienced the magic of this kind of relationship, they were like, yeah, we'll bite. We're in.
That's great. One of my favorite chapters in the book is Surviving the Rough Patches chapter, which talks a lot about conflict and conflict resolution. And I was especially fascinated to hear you two write about, quote unquote, learning to fight, especially that a management coach was helping you guys figure out how to be more vocal with your own frustrations with each other. So I would love if you guys could kind of talk me through, back when you were still getting this business off the ground and it was really starting to grow for the first time, how did you figure out that you needed to improve your communication system between the two of you? And how did you go about doing that in this really tangible way?
Well, we didn't really figure it out until about 5 years into the business, to be honest. I mean, I think we had a basic sense, but for 5 years, we probably had, I don't know, a couple of big fights, and I don't even know.
Like an annual fight. Yeah. An annual, like, meltdown.
Yeah. And after selling the business And there was a lot of tension arising from it, not around the sale of the business itself, but the fact that we found ourselves in this new situation. We had a boss, we had a different team under us, we had new roles. And finally,
it was this moment of change. And I think for us, whenever there are these dramatic moments of change, you just start to be, you start to think about, well, like, what is this going to look like going forward? What's my role going to be? How is this all going to fit together?
So we decided at that point, we recognized that we were struggling and that we were struggling to sort of figure things out between the two of us or to like talk about it in a productive way. And so we decided to start seeing a management coach. And one of the very first things he addressed with us was that we needed to learn how to fight. And it just was not something that was in our relationship repertoire. I think you have those people in your life who you're comfortable arguing with. They're typically family members, at least in my personal case. And then there are those people who you never fight with. And the idea of 10 years into your relationship, fighting with them for the first time, or in our case, probably like 15 years in, seems really intimidating. And not to mention if that person's a coworker or your business partner, you're like, what am I going to derail an entire working day by having this big emotional meltdown? And what he really taught us was that, what our management coach really taught us, was that it doesn't need to be this big thing. It can just be a conversation, and you're both coming from it at it from a place of wanting the other person to feel better. And you need to just practice and make it become something normal and routine for you so that it doesn't feel like this big deal.
So how did you go about practicing? Were you like, Claire, Erica, I'm going to have a fight with you now? What did that look like when you were kind of getting comfortable with this?
I think it was a little bit more like internal or introspective of saying, of recognizing, for me at least, okay, I'm having this feeling about this thing. In the past, I might have squashed that feeling and said like, oh, you're just feeling that way, or like, nothing, that's like not really a thing, or you don't need to worry about that, or like, why would you bring that up with Claire? She's going to think you're like a lunatic, or that you're dwelling on something that doesn't matter, or why would this be the thing that you would like get in a debate over? Who cares? And instead of following that natural tendency where you're thinking about something in the shower and being like, oh, just shut up about it, of saying actively, I'm going to bring this up with her and we're going to have a conversation about it, to just air it.
And I think it helps to do that, and to do it when it feels like something big, and even when it feels like something small, because I really do think the more you do it, the more it breaks down that intimidation factor, because you start to realize, oh, this isn't going to be the thing that ends our relationship or that stops us talking to each other for an entire week.
And there are things, an example that comes to mind, I remember not that long ago, and this is something that has come up at various points, where after a meeting, Claire had pulled me aside and had been like, hey, in this meeting, you were like completing my sentences or completing my thoughts. And I was feeling like you were like sort of talking over me, or at least like not giving me the chance to finish, which is something that I know that I have the tendency to do. And I think in my mind, in doing so, am demonstrating that like I'm backing her up, or that we're on the same page, or that I'm, you know, like I am reiterating what she's saying. And hearing that her experience with this is different is really helpful. And that's something that, like, it doesn't need to be a big blow up thing, but it's something that, you know, we both feel differently about. And in expressing those feelings, can then be much more sensitive to it than we otherwise were. So it's something that, you know, maybe every couple of years gets surfaced. And it's a good reminder for me of the, even though I think that I'm doing it from a certain place, it's reading differently to her. And that's important.
Sure. Has that kind of mindful communication trickled down to your employees as you have grown your team?
I hope so. I mean, I think it certainly trickled down to the way Eric and I manage. I think we've gotten a lot more comfortable giving critical feedback to employees. And certainly, you know, when I first started managing people, I found it really challenging to give any sort of negative feedback. And now when I do it, I don't even think of it as negative feedback. I'm just like, this is just information. So I hope that, you know, I think in getting used to doing that and doing it in a routine way, I think everybody just sort of gets more comfortable with it.
Sure. And to the point of building a team, that's consistently, I think, one of the toughest experiences founders have, no matter who we talk to in what industry. They're like, oh my God, building a team was the hardest thing I've ever done.
How did you
That's
two
so comforting to hear, because
oh, it's by far the most consistent thing I hear in this job.
It took us by surprise how hard it was.
And so you said you guys have 10 full-time employees now?
Us included, yeah. And
okay.
Then usually about 4 interns. And I think something that we actually had to learn to get comfortable with was trusting our gut and our instincts when hiring people, because I think in the beginning, it was easy to say, well, like, this person seems, they check all the boxes, right? Like, they have the experience, they have the resume, they put, like, they said the right things in the interview. But I think it wasn't until we realized we have to click with this person on a human level, because one, we're going to be interacting with them all the time, and two, the team is small and there just have to be good vibes, that we became better at hiring and therefore managing a team.
So how did you do that? Was it a matter of shifting how you were recruiting people or how you were interviewing them? Or was it like mostly just, like you said, that gut instinct?
I mean, it really plays into our interview style in a big way. So we both interview, we're at the size of, at a size in the company where we both interview everybody who comes in. And we realized we were just spending so much time where giving these sort of lengthy interviews to people who, when they walked through the door, one of us at least was just sort of like, this person's not going to work for me. So we started a routine where at the first round interview for every candidate is 15 minutes, and we tell them that before they come in. And that just gives us a chance to get a read on a person before investing a lot of time and really getting to know them, especially since there's two of us, and it sort of increases the likelihood that one of us is going to have that feeling of like, you know what, this person just doesn't feel right to me.
And we've gotten feedback or like heard feedback before of people being like, their like interviews were stupid and they didn't ask like, you know, the right questions or whatever. You know what? I don't care. The point of the interview, the first round interview for this job for me is to get a read on how this person presents and how they would interact in this environment and how I genuinely feel about them. And then if we do a second or third interview, then we can do a deep dive into like, okay, how would you think about marketing strategy? Or how would you work with this larger team? Or how do you manage your time?
I mean, sure. I think if our partnership has taught us anything, it's that you cannot underestimate the value of liking the people you work with. And so that first 15 minutes does give you the chance to say like, is this person going to drive me crazy? Or is this someone who I think I could potentially really get along with?
Or am I getting like a mean girl vibe or a bully vibe? Or, you know, those are things we have dealt with over the course of running the business. And it is impossible to underestimate how much they bring down the entire team.
Sure. I was going to say, I mean, less than perfect hires inevitably happen from time to time. How have you guys dealt with that in the past when you have found yourself in a situation where you brought somebody on board and it's just not working?
We had to learn to get good at figuring out, one, how to give feedback around and give feedback in a way that was set to sort of a timeline and making sure that people understood that the sort of that like change had to happen and it had to happen quickly for there to be a good working relationship down the road. And then we had to get good at, you know, and or comfortable with firing people and just accepting that that is part of the reality of building a business and that it says nothing about the person. It just says everything about their fit for the role or for the role at that particular time. And just to learn to do so from a place of compassion and to make it clear that we value everything that they've done for the company and everything they put in and value them as a person too.
Sure. You mentioned that you guys are at a stage now where you both are very actively involved in that hiring process. But as the company grows and you maybe are not always available to do those interviews, how do you maintain that kind of search for culture fit and following a gut instinct if you aren't necessarily the two people who are in that room with those candidates?
I think a big part of it is reinforcing the culture with the entire team so that everybody comes to embrace it. We have a big poster in our office that lists out our sort of, for lack of a better term, core values. And kindness and sense of humor are both on there because that's something, and curiosity. Those are things that we really value. And I think we've made it clear to our team that those are things we value in our office place. And so I think the more we can sort of reiterate those traits, the more they will adopt them and make sure that they continue.
Terrific. I did want to talk for a minute about babies because there is an entire chapter in the book dedicated to them. And I know that there is a sleeping baby in the background of this call. I'm sorry, which one of you said you have a newborn?
It's me. He's Claire. It's Claire. His name is Cam. I wish he were sleeping, but he's been quiet. So
oh, he's very quiet.
There. He looks not really happy.
Is he your first?
He is my first.
Great. Congratulations. And Erica, do you have kids as well?
I do not have kids, and I'm not planning on having kids.
Okay, got it. So when you guys were writing this book, keeping that in mind, why was this such an important chapter to you? What had you seen in your own work experiences that you wanted to address and also let the other founders that you spoke to really speak to this topic? Because I love the chapter, and I thought it was interesting that you gave it so much real estate.
We're so glad. That was one of our favorites too. I mean, honestly, what we had seen and where the curiosity came from was our own relationship. Like Erica said, she's known for a really long time that she doesn't want kids. And I had felt really ambivalent about it, but suspected that I probably wanted them. And it was a big point of tension for us. I had a lot of insecurity and fear around, you know, that Erica would sort of like leave me behind once I was weighed down by the responsibility of a kid. And that once I was slowed down by it, and I was worried that, you know, she was so desperately didn't want kids herself that she wouldn't want to be around mine. And I think she was really, you know, had insecurities in sort of the opposite direction about being the one without a kid or being, you know, that I would go, you know, become consumed by it. You can imagine all of the things. And it was something we had really had to navigate ourselves. And to go back to the issue of difficult conversations and conflict, that was one of our like most emotional conversations that we've ever had, is when we finally just brought it to the forefront and we're like, okay, this is probably going to happen. I'm probably going to have a kid at some point. What's it going to look like? And there was a huge release for us when we finally confronted it and sort of put it all out on the table, but we still didn't know how we were going to navigate it. And as I got closer and closer to the point where I knew we were going to start to try, I had a ton of anxiety around what it would look like in practice. So initially, just interviewing the other women in the book, I think there was a lot of just sort of selfish curiosity, like, how did you guys manage this? And then the answers were so moving. I would like get choked up in these interviews. I remember Amanda Hesser talking, and Meryl Stubbs, the founders of Food 52, and Meryl talking about Amanda writing her weekly emails to keep her in the loop, to let her know everything she needed to know so that she wouldn't feel totally lost when she came back, but sort of protecting her from all of the stuff that she didn't need to know. And on the flip side, Amanda talking about during one of Meryl's maternity leaves, she was going through a really hard emotional time, and Meryl saying to her, I think you're struggling. I think you need to talk to someone. I think you need to focus on this. And Amanda needing to admit to herself that it was really hard for her to function without Meryl there every day. There were just really moving conversations that really brought to light the fact that, one, having kids is a huge part of, I think, of the challenge of being a woman in the workplace, and the fact that the United States in particular has struggled to develop practices and customs and laws that accommodate it. And that, two, the more women can be friends to each other in the workplace, the more we can make it easier on each other to do this and to be a working mother.
I think another reason why we gave it so much real estate is just that being a woman in the workplace, you can't separate the professional and the personal. Those things are inherently intertwined. And when we think that one of the most prime examples of that is the fact that when you are pregnant, after 3 months, everybody at the office, everybody in your life knows this. This is not something you can keep a secret. And so learning how to better deal with women who are pregnant, who are having maternity leave, who are raising, you know, children of any age, who are dealing with sick parents, who have other personal things happening that, you know, women do often, for better or worse, bear more of the burden of, felt important to include in a book like this.
Sure. After you did the reporting for this chapter, did you guys then have additional conversations between the two of you about what your own path would be once Claire did eventually have a child?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we cribbed directly from Meryl.
Oh, cribbed.
We cribbed directly from Amanda and Meryl's playbook, in that Erica actually comes over to my house 2 afternoons a week and has since Cam was born, to really just catch me up on what's going on at the office, get any input from me that she needs. We work on anything that requires the both of us. And she also just helps out with Cam. And it's been a really incredible way to make me feel less anxiety and FOMO about being away from the office, and to just feel like our relationship has stayed intact throughout this period.
And it's been really wonderful and helpful for me. I mean, I think something that I expressed to Claire and to friends leading up to Claire having Cam was that I was worried about being alone at the office, not so much in the like day-to-day like managing team aspect of it, but more in the like, I'm used to having this person here to bounce ideas off of, to have an exchange with, and to feel like very emotionally connected with. And it does feel like it's a bit more of an island right now. And so being able to see Claire multiple times a week, to know that she's doing well, to know what she's struggling with, and to see how she's evolving on a sort of day-to-day basis has been really helpful, to not feel like, oh, there's this separateness. She's off there doing this thing. I think it's going okay, but I don't really know.
And sure. That, like, what Erica just said really gets at what I think moved me so much about Amanda, this practice that Amanda and Meryl developed is keeping each other in the loop when one was out. Because I do think something that is really hard for women who go on maternity leave, and make no mistake, obviously maternity leave is critically important and should be legally mandated. But I think what's really challenging is you're out of the loop for something like 3 months, and then you're coming back into the office and you're questioning, you know, where do I stand and how do I get caught up after being out for so long? And do I still have the same authority that I had when I left? And I think that that is like an unrealistic hurdle for a lot of women to clear. And I think it's why you see a lot of off-ramping with women after they have kids. And so I really like loved this idea of like, yes, you can take time off. And of course you want to take time off, but you also do want to stay connected in some way. And there has to be a manageable way to do that.
And something else I think we've learned around this topic is that there within a lot of companies or within a lot of working environments, there's a good amount of thought sometimes put into, okay, someone is going on maternity leave, who's going to take care of their work when they're gone, and how is that going to work? Who are these projects passed off to? Who's picking things up? Is there a maternity leave fill-in, whatever? But then there's a lot less thought put into how does someone get sort of like what does reentry look like? And how do we make sure that this person who's a valuable member of our team gets up to speed as quickly or as efficiently as possible and is able to step into a role without questioning their value or where they fit in now, or, you know, to compound the emotional stress that already exists.
Of course. I think that the idea of work-life balance in general, kids or no kids, is obviously something that every entrepreneur struggles with. We've actually been working on a story here at the magazine related to that very thing. And so many people kind of came back to us and they were like, that just doesn't exist and that's okay. It's just about finding ways to integrate your work and your life. How have you guys kind of incorporated that into the culture that you've built at Of A Kind?
I think in writing the book, one of the conclusions that we came to, or the sort of things that we realized, was that one of the most valuable things about a work life is that you don't have to separate the personal and professional, that I can come to work or come to a meeting with Erica and say like, hey, I'm really excited about this project we're just about to talk about, but I have to tell you, I'm struggling with this thing in my personal life. And if I seem a little off today or I seem less excited, it's not about the work. It's about this thing that's happening, right? And that has just been so valuable in our working relationship and allowed us to flourish in so many ways. And so we've taken that back to our management style and realized we need to make sure that our employees understand that we welcome that in their professional life too. And that if they want to tell us about what's happening in their personal life to the extent that it's impacting their professional life, we want them to feel comfortable with that. And we want them to know that we're open to that and we're here to talk to them about it. And of course, you know, you want to have certain boundaries, but we try to set the precedent in the office that we know everybody has personal lives and we know they impact their professional lives too. And this year especially was a good opportunity for us to sort of set an example in that way, in that I was pregnant and I let our team know really early on that, you know, I was really sick and I was struggling with it. And I shared it with them before I shared it with most people because I wanted them to know. And Erica had stuff in her personal life that she was very open about because she was having to sort of dip out of meetings or travel some to deal with it. And I think it meant something to them to see that we were saying like, hey, this is what's happening in our lives. This is how it's impacting work. And just so you know, type of thing.
And we saw that play out with other employees in meetings and saw just a certain comfort level with sharing things because of, I think, the example that we were setting. Another thing that we do, both in meetings with each other and with the women who work with us, is try to ask the open-ended question in more check-ins than not of how are you feeling about everything, which, you know, is an opportunity to say like, yeah, I feel good about the work on my plate, or I feel like I have this under control, or, you know, this project's like a little more of a lift than I thought it was going to be. Or it's the opportunity to say, yeah, so I wanted to tell you I've been struggling with this thing, or I've had this family thing, or I think I need to go, you know, do this. And people do take advantage of that. And I think just giving people that beat to say something without them having to start the conversation has been a nice way to get at that.
That's a really, really good piece of advice. I did want to just pivot a second. I know we had talked about Bed Bath & Beyond earlier, but I would love to kind of jump back to 2015 when that sale was happening. When that opportunity presented itself, how did you two even start considering it and talking it through and making sure that you were both on the same page?
So we were at a point in the business where we had started to think about this as a potential outcome. We'd never raised a lot of money. We had only ever raised really like friends and family money. And we'd been grinding at the business for 5 years, largely just the two of us with not a ton of help. And we were starting to feel burnt out, and we were starting to feel like if we were going to continue building this business, there needed to be some shift. Bed Bath & Beyond was not who we thought we'd end up partnering up with. They were not on our list. But after our very first meeting with them, I mean, I can remember it really clearly, standing at the elevator banks of this office building and looking at each other and sort of laughing and both just being like, wow, we really like them. I mean, I think when it comes to being on the same page, that is one of the nice things about our relationship. We often sort of walk away from conversations with that same sort of like, that was amazing, or that was miserable. An interesting thing about it, in addition to the fact that I think they really respected our business, they were excited about what we were doing, they shared a sort of similar, I think, entrepreneurial mindset to us, was that they actually were also co-founded by two best friends. So their founding story is like two best friends starting what was then a pretty small business. They're now in their 80s and they both co-chair the board. They regularly show up at the office dressed alike and they go on family vacations together. So it was a sort of funny, like, wow, there's something a little kindred here about our businesses that you would not have expected.
It's like you guys found new role models.
Exactly. And
truly, truly. I mean, we're not as good at the like matching V-neck sweaters, but it's something to aspire to.
That's great. And then just to close out, obviously you guys have pointed to so many great lessons that you learned from other founders while you were working on this book. But I would love to just hear a couple more kind of changes or even ways that you're just going to be mindful about how you run your business moving forward based on what you learned from working on this project together.
That's a great question. I mean, I think one thing that was funny is that we've obviously never written a book together. And we've done so much together and we've been working together for like 8 years or something by the time we started it, that we didn't really take the time to sit down and be like, okay, so how do we attack this project? We just sort of dove in, being like, we've worked on so much together. This whole project is
another project, right?
Yeah. And the whole project is about how well we work together. So why would we need to talk about it? It was really challenging at points. And I think it was a good reminder to be like, right, when we are doing something we've never done before, we still have to go back to the drawing board and figure out how we're going to work together on this thing. Even though we've been working together on so many things for 9 years now. And I think that was a good lesson and a good reminder for us, even though it was something we knew internally, instinctively, we didn't actually practice it.
And I think another thing, which is not something that maybe didn't know so much as that we really came to embrace, was just leaning into the commitment that a relationship like this is, and to not like discount or downplay that. This like really is like a marriage in pretty much every way, except there is no signed document that we got from City Hall or from a priest. And I think just hearing other women talk about their relationships and hearing their experiences and hearing the way that they had come to understand the significance of this relationship in their life, and maybe a relationship that they've now had for 40 years, made us feel like we didn't need to downplay this or discount it, even if the world really doesn't have a term for what we do.
Awesome. You guys, thank you so much for taking the time and talking with us today. So psyched for Workwife to hit the bookshelves. And I hope to talk to you both soon. Wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much. This was great.
All right. Thanks for your time. Thanks, guys. Talk soon.
Me too.
That's our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. How Success Happens comes out every week. To catch each episode, please subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Like, share, and leave us a review so we can always be improving. Go to entrepreneur.com for more episodes of this show and our other great podcasts. That's entrepreneur.com. Thanks.